A jail stint can really disrupt someone's life. You can lose a job, a relationship, or thousands of dollars on fees, fines, and bail.
Have I ever gone to jail? Yeah, I just got out, actually.
If he doesn't show up to court, you gotta pay the $50,000.
No ring exchange, no kiss the bride. There's no glamour in a jailhouse wedding.
Off the Block. All six episodes tracing the path from city block to jail block and back are now available on KCRW's iTunes page.
Hi, I'm Frances Anderton, and this is DNA. On today's show, can urban and suburban Los Angeles simply get along?
We should really look at what we're doing. Look at the city globally and understand what those new regulations, if they were imposed, would really mean. I think it would be a disaster.
Hear from architect Frank Gehry and others on the clash over growth in Los Angeles. Before we get to that, though, next Tuesday, we California voters get to vote on Proposition 64. If it passes, it means that adults in California could carry up to an ounce of marijuana, enough to roll 40 average-sized joints. It would also allow for resentencing and destruction of records for prior marijuana convictions. So, if it passes, are you planning on growing your pot at home with your six allowable pot plants, or would you rather buy from, say, a high-end dispensary with a clean, bright interior, blonde wood and cannabis products elegantly displayed? This is just one of the possible outcomes of what some have dubbed the Green Rush. Alex Halperin is the Denver-based editor of the newsletter Weed Week.
Design is really important in the industry. For a couple of reasons. One is that there's so little advertising, and advertising is highly restricted and is going to be for a long time. And at the same time, so many of the products are so similar, really. The branding and design on a package is really one of the few ways that companies can differentiate themselves. I was just in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago, and the brand concepts there were much more sophisticated, much richer than in Colorado. And I think some of that has to do with tighter rules about packaging in Colorado. So everything sort of ends up looking vaguely pharmaceutical. A lot of things come in cylindrical plastic containers that are childproof. And in California, it doesn't seem like that restriction is in place. So brands were telling richer stories, as they say.
And what is the richer story?
Right now, the industry is in the midst of a huge charm offensive where the illegal marijuana industry is worth roughly $40 billion a year. And they want to get it up to sort of compete with alcohol, which is $200 billion a year domestic. The way to do that is to attract new customers. And for a product like marijuana, there's a lot of work to do to attract new customers. So there are brands out there that are really geared towards seniors, towards, I think, the holy grail, which is adult professionals, both sort of with or without children. So the whole industry is sort of in the midst of this push to eliminate the stigma, and design, both because of design is sort of how we relate to the world, and also just because of other restrictions, is a huge element of that.
That's Alex Halperin, editor of the newsletter Weed Week. I'm Frances Anderton. You're listening to DNA. You can already see how a once illicit trade is coming out in the open in cleanly packaged product lines like Leafs by Snoop, designed by global branding firm Pentagram.
Snoop Dogg personally selected all Leafs by Snoop strains for their aroma, taste, effect, and bud structure. Leafs by Snoop embodies the California cool lifestyle and has a variety of products available for every cannabis consumer.
One of those who's betting on a cannabis retail explosion is interior designer Megan Stone. She's owner and founder of the High Road Design Studio based in Phoenix, Arizona. She began as a patient, then she worked as a bud tender in a dispensary about 7 years ago, and she saw a business opportunity in retail.
I think what most people in this country still conjure up in their head when you say marijuana dispensary is steel bars on the windows, the flickering neon green cross that was outside, and the huge, enormous armed security guard that was standing at the door. I was just always surprised with how little thought was put into the experience that people were having, whether it was, you know, somebody who marijuana had made a major impact on, you know, possibly had saved their life because it helped them through stage 4 cancer or helped them kick an opioid prescription addiction or, you know, got them through the despairs of depression or bipolar. Marijuana fundamentally was something that everybody was coming in and having a positive experience around. And so finding a way to bring design into that and not only professionalize and bring some integrity to that experience, but also kind of help rebrand the experience so more and more people could look at the experience as something positive and something attractive versus something that they didn't want in their backyard and something that must be relegated to criminals and illicit behavior.
So you've designed dispensaries in Colorado, but you've also done two in the Southland in Orange County. So I look at photos of some of your dispensaries. To the extent they have common themes, there's a cleanliness, there's an openness, there's sort of clean line furnishings. You have glass top display counters. They could be displaying jewelry. You've got a nice art on the walls. There's a kind of sort of soft evocation of a cannabis leaf, but it's nothing like the old pothead stores that you'd walk into in the 70s. There's a kind of a clinical appearance to them, very sort of sanitary. Is that your intention?
Yes. I think that a sense of openness inside of these facilities is smart, not just from a security and efficiency standpoint. You know, how much safer is a building when you can see the whole premise versus when you're divided up into rooms? But also that openness plays into the psychology of the experience, too. And really using design as a way to elevate this industry, as a way to rebrand this industry in the minds and hearts of the communities that truly need these businesses.
If you had to say a dispensary is like, would it be like a wine bar or a nice coffee shop, or would it be like a pharmacy? As in, do you play up the sensory aspects or do you play up the more medical aspects in terms of the space?
A little bit of both. And a lot of that's guided by the brand and the client's need and the market that they're in. This is where a lot of the nuance comes into my job. I can't do the same thing for my clients in Florida that I can for my clients in California because politically it's different. Regulatory-wise, it's different, right down to the products that one is allowed to sell versus the other. So my clients in Florida, it's much more of a medical pharmacy type experience because politically that's what they were comfortable with allowing. Contrast that with the work I've done in California or here in Arizona or in Colorado, where you don't necessarily have to paint that experience as something staunchly medical because culturally cannabis sits in a different place. And politically and from a regulatory standpoint, it's a completely different game in those states too.
Assuming this measure passes in California, things are going to explode in terms of business opportunities for folks like yourself. But could you imagine ultimately there being a transition to these products being sold at Rite Aid or at Whole Foods or at Costco, that they get so normalized that one doesn't even need a specific destination to dispense marijuana?
What a beautiful world that would be, right? I think that would be a wonderful thing to see happen. For us to come so far as a society and as a government to totally admit that we have been flat out wrong about this for the last 80 years and bring it back to the place in society I feel it should be, where it's treated no differently than my calcium supplement, or it's treated no differently than bulk coffee. You look at cannabis laws, you know, in South America, and, you know, you look at what our neighbors to the north are doing in Canada, and that's exactly what they're thinking. You know, they're not thinking of creating a new retail industry for this. They're thinking of framing this inside the current pharmacy or even liquor store models that they have. And, you know, walking into a restaurant someday, and just like you see the suggested wine pairing, you see the suggested vape pairing with that meal. I think that that will eventually come, but I certainly don't have that in my business model for 2017 or 2018.
That was Megan Stone. And yes, that really is her name. One of her clients, by the way, is called Mike Roach. And she was interviewed in Forbes magazine by a journalist named Julie Weed. You really can't make this stuff up. Anyway, she is owner and founder of the High Road Design Studio. I'm Frances Anderton. You're listening to DNA. Coming up after this break, how the outcome of Measure LV in Santa Monica signals a direction for growth in the Southland.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This podcast is produced by KCRW. Find all of KCRW's music, storytelling, cultural, and news podcasts on our iTunes page.
Back with DNA, I'm Frances Anderton. Now, have you ever heard of A Tale of Two Cities? Well, that title could apply right now to the fight going on in Los Angeles over growth. Angelenos are in the midst of an epic battle over which of two cities they want to live in. Low-rise, spread-out, car-friendly, otherwise known as suburban, or high-rise, mixed-use residential and commercial, walkable, and public transit-based, aka urban. The battle is also over which of these two LAs can keep the region's housing affordable as the middle class is hollowed out. Both sides think their version of LA is a means to maintaining affordable housing. This complicated fight, somewhat simplified in this description, is playing out in the Southland over several important measures that voters will decide on next week. In LA County, you have Measure M. That's the LA Metro sales tax that would speed up the construction of mass transportation and alternative mobility. In the city of Los Angeles, you have Measure HHH, the homelessness housing bond, as well as Measure JJJ, an affordable housing mandate. Then in Santa Monica, there is Measure LV, also known as LUVE, or Land Use Voter Empowerment. And that's a measure that's being watched with great interest all around the region.
So Santa Monica has always been a little bit of the canary in the coal mine. The issues that are raging across the Southland, including in our neighbors in Los Angeles, are here in microcosm. If we get it right here, I think we set a model for other communities.
That is the optimistic view of Rick Cole, city manager for the city of Santa Monica. More from him in a moment. Go to Santa Monica right now and you might hear the following arguments. First up, Phil Brock. He was a longtime recreation and parks commissioner for the city of Santa Monica.
Santa Monica was a beachside community, which means low-rise, beach-style dwellings and a comfortable lifestyle that's different from downtown Los Angeles. With recent development agreements and recent trends in Santa Monica, we're seeing the rise of mid-rise to high-rise developments. Those portend doom for the way of life that we've had in Santa Monica for 141 years.
And here's Frank Gruber, writer and former planning commissioner for the city of Santa Monica. Both were guests on KCRW's Press Play.
What LV is, it's the product of the people who were kind of left over on the extremes after the city went through a six-year project to update its general plan and then a five-year zoning ordinance. And they're really kind of counterproductive in what they want to do. They'll end up getting a lot more retail and office that generates more traffic than housing, which actually helps keep Santa Monica what it is.
What both men agree on is that Santa Monica's downtown has, by design, gone more urban. Elected officials and planners have encouraged mixed-use multi-story buildings with cafes and shops on the ground level, topped by rentals or condos. The city has widened some sidewalks and added bike lanes and enhanced the arrival of the Expo Line with the Colorado Esplanade. It has installed new pedestrian scrambles, some with cheerful murals painted on them. It has encouraged commercial development that helps support the city's public schools and handsome public amenities like Tongva Park. The upshot is a bustling Santa Monica city centre that many find far more attractive than in the past. Jason Islas is with Santa Monica Forward. That's a group that opposes Measure LV, and he grew up in Santa Monica.
It's changed. It absolutely has changed. You know, my parents used to warn us about staying out there too late because it would get quiet at night and it would be dark and there'd not be many people around. And there was a sense that it was dangerous. It's gotten a lot nicer. And there are people who are definitely frustrated by that, you know, because you've lost a few things, right? Like independent bookstores and things like that. But that's not a Santa Monica problem, right? I mean, this is a problem of world economics today.
That's Jason Islas. Others find the new downtown crazy-making because, yes, it is more congested and harder to find a parking spot. Measure LV, if passed, aims to slow this urban momentum for downtown. It would mandate that voters approve any project taller than 32 feet, with some exceptions. And it's necessary, say the LV folks, because even though the zoning code allows some flexibility in approving higher or denser projects, they feel the city officials are giving developers too much height and density in exchange for too little community benefits. One person who entered this fractious argument just as it was heating up last year is Rick Cole. He is now Santa Monica's city manager. He previously held the same position in the city of Azusa, and he has served as the mayor of Pasadena. I spoke with him at a community meeting where he and city planners were getting local residents to workshop ideas on how they would like to see Santa Monica grow.
We're trying to come to a common ground so people don't have to have an artificial choice between a very draconian and problematic alternative and a plan that's actually the result of broad-based community consensus.
What is draconian about the alternative?
Well, if Love were to pass, it would be the most complicated and restrictive growth measure of any community of our size in California in history. So its impacts are really kind of unknown. It's a very different approach to managing growth, never been tested before. I hope that people in Santa Monica will read the Love Initiative. It's a difficult one to understand. It has lots of legal challenges, but it speaks to a very legitimate concern.
So what is the idea that underscores Love, and what is the substance?
So if you were to ask residents of Santa Monica, have we done a good job at managing growth over the last 10 years? I think most people would say we have failed to do that. Not because we haven't had a lot of positive things happen, but because there has been such an increase in traffic. Now, a great deal of that traffic has nothing whatever to do with the development in downtown because the traffic is the same or worse across the border in Los Angeles. We're in the midst of a revolution in mobility. Some of it is generated by us, our Breeze bike share, the arrival of Expo, the rerouting of our Big Blue bus system, the encouragement of more pedestrian and bike amenities. But there's also a tremendous technological revolution changing transportation all across the country, the advent of driverless cars, Uber and Lyft, all of the ways in which transportation is changing. So we need to get our arms around the issue of traffic. That's, I think, more than anything else driving the anxiety in Santa Monica.
You're listening to Santa Monica City Manager Rick Cole. And judging by the pro-LV yard signs, which say, tired of traffic, that seems to be the main impetus for the measure. So if traffic is such a problem, one asks, why not focus on the causes of traffic that include, for example, the fact that 90,000 people live in Santa Monica, yet something like 160,000 workers and visitors drive into the city each day. If you're one of them, you know those jams on the 10 going and West. And that includes nurses, teachers, and others who are the backbone of the community but cannot afford housing in the city. Ask LV supporters and they will say that Santa Monica has reached capacity. But they point out that LV does allow for taller buildings if they contain 100% affordable units, and that's not what we call workforce housing, which those nurses might be able to afford. The anti-LV folks point out this is a red herring, because the measure contains no provision to fund the non-profit developers that would build this 100% affordable in pricey Santa Monica. They also say that if developers can't build in downtown, they will look to other parts of the city and put pressure on the rent-stabilised units there. All of this begs the question, is LV about constructive forward planning, or does it hope to somehow turn the clock back while keeping all the benefits of growth? Again, here's Rick Cole.
Well, as popular as KCRW is, there's an even more popular radio station called WIFM, What's in It for Me? And that's the challenge of working in the public realm today, is we have devolved far too much into thinking about how does this affect me and am I for it? Is this help me? Is this hurt me? I understand why people have become fearful and selfish, because that's the dominant mode, right? If the person on the other side of the table is trying to grab, you're inclined to grab back. But that's the wonderful thing about a downtown, is it really doesn't belong to anyone. It doesn't belong to the property owners, doesn't belong to the government, doesn't belong to the tourists, doesn't belong to the people who live in that neighborhood, nor to the people who live around that neighborhood. It actually belongs to all of us. So I'm looking for the idealists in this generation, or these generations that are now coexisting, to think beyond what's in it for me and to really think about what's in it for the future.
Now, the idealists in past generations that you just referred to, many of them actually embraced height. Santa Monica started to go up in the late 20s, then again in the 50s, then again in the 70s. And yet what we seem to be seeing right now is a real struggle around height.
So many things in public life are reminiscent of Japanese kabuki theater, in which we have these kind of exaggerated debates that really stand for something else entirely. I think height has become a marker for, do you want to see the Manhattanization of Santa Monica, or do you want to keep us a sleepy beach town? In fact, both are grotesque stereotypes or mischaracterizations. We haven't built anything in 30 years over six stories in downtown Santa Monica. On the other hand, we haven't been a sleepy beach town probably since the 30s. So height is more symbol than reality. We're trying to get past just the height issue and really talk about the character of old buildings, the character of new buildings. Think about what needs to be paired with height. If you're going to have greater density, you need greater open space and public space. The life of a great city has way more to do with what happens on the ground level than looking up and seeing whether a building is four stories or six stories. So I'd like to get off of the fixation on height, but I recognize that for many, many people, that becomes the kind of acid test.
That was Santa Monica City Manager Rick Cole talking about Measure LV. You're listening to DNA, and I'm Frances Anderton. Now, that measure was started by people in Santa Monica who were really, really frustrated at four dense projects proposed for the city. One of them was a hotel, residential and commercial development designed by Frank Gehry. A similar battle has been playing out over another Gehry design project, this one in Los Angeles on Sunset Boulevard at Crescent Heights, bordering the city of West Hollywood. The proposed five-structure development from Townscape Partners includes two residential towers, commercial space and a pedestrian plaza with terrace gardens. But the road to approval was paved with fights and now compromise. Folks living in the Hollywood Hills objected to it blocking their view. Residents of West Hollywood and LA complained about increased traffic. So Councilman David Wu, who represents the area and was elected last year on a promise of greater transparency, said he wouldn't support the project unless the developer reduced the height and added more affordable units and more parking spaces. Finally, LA planning officials approved the project last Tuesday, and the city council signed off on it earlier today. One of the points Frank Gehry made at last week's planning meeting is that at age 87, he has known LA longer than most people and has seen it continually change. So we asked him, how does he feel about his revised design and what the resistance to the project revealed about the city's state of mind?
You know, if you talk about current ideas and planning where they want to put a lid on everything and stay a certain height, creates a very boring skyline and it doesn't make an interesting city. And so if you start thinking about things as urban design and you start to punctuate with something slightly higher, not necessarily a big tower, but elements that pop up and designate a space, that's what we were trying to do. Because this is the entry to the Sunset Strip from the east side, the east, and it would be a shame to put a dull, boring pancake there. We were trying to make something more interesting, more sculptural.
So the drop from 234 feet to 178 feet, has that in any way, in your view, diminished the design, or is that not a deterrent to realizing what you want to realize with the design?
No, I think we can roll with the punches. So, you know, we'll figure out how to make it work.
So you've made some of these modifications because there's been resistance to the height and density. You've got a project in Santa Monica that's meeting resistance for, over height and density. We've got two measures coming up that have to do with trying to hold back height and density in LA. Does this project make some sort of statement about how the city should be thinking about these issues?
Well, I think so. I think that when you blanket, say, give it a height, you get developments like across the street from my office on Jefferson, where there's just a whole mile long building that's four stories high, and it's just banal.
We're talking Playa Vista, and I believe the and I believe the term that's floated around your office is Stalinist.
Yeah, maybe. I think that setting these heights like that is detrimental. Now, I think the only model for doing that is the European, where they had the 6 and 7 story buildings that created a lot of the cities, but that was all done at one time, almost with an architectural language that was pretty well consistent, and in the end it had a wonderful feeling to it because it's kind of because of the detailing, because of the architecture of it. But we're not doing that.
Lastly, Frank, do you recall a phase in LA's development where there was such resistance to growth region-wide as we're feeling now?
I don't think so. It's not the same. Now there's a kind of just a blanket overall kind of, if it's all at one height, then it's safe and we won't get all the traffic and blah, blah, blah. And it's you know, wrong-headed.
You are among many, many people who came to LA because it was a place to be creative and explore, and there was sort of an openness. Does
right.
that feeling still exist?
It could. In some places it does, but there seems to be a closing of the windows on that. And we should really look at what we're doing, look at the city globally and understand what those new regulations, if they were imposed, would really mean. I think it would be a disaster.
You're listening to Frank Gehry. I'm Frances Anderton. That's it for today's DNA.
Design.
Architecture.
I told my mother I was going to be a famous architect.
Design's a really loaded word.
Avishai Artsy is the show's producer. JC Swatek mixed this episode. Special thanks to Jason Groman and Stephanie Case. Thank you very much for listening. Stay tuned for The World, coming up next.